News Radio 1280. WWTC, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
In the Twin Cities at 29 before 5, mostly cloudy skies and 23 degrees, I'm Doug Channing.
This is Bob Bungard among the top stories at this hour. Minneapolis Alderman Lee Munich tells News Radio he may change his vote of yesterday in the confirmation proceedings of Richard Parker as director of the Civil Rights Department. The Government Operations Committee voted unanimously to approve the mayor's selection.
As I indicated at the end of yesterday's meeting, I did not feel a sense of satisfaction about the hearing. I'm particularly not satisfied with Mr. Parker's non-position on women's rights. There are more issues than that of race involved in the job of civil rights director, and I'm not satisfied that they were adequately covered yesterday. So during the next week, I will be asking Mr. Parker to meet with women leaders to clarify his position on women's issues, and I will be talking with other aldermen and asking them to carefully consider Mr. Parker's positions before making a decision on his confirmation.
The full council must approve Parker's appointment to that job, and the consideration will be made next week.
The Stillwater Prisoners Union has filed suit on behalf of all Minnesota felons to find out what is being done with their money and property that's turned over to the state while they're in prison. Inmates claim they have no idea where the money goes or what's being done with it. A plaintiff in that suit, Gene Robinson, says some inmates receive interest every year, but most of them receive nothing. He's ready to ask Robinson just how much money is involved.
Basically, we know that there's at least, there's 800 inmates a year, and there's $100 that they are forced to save in their accounts. That's for their release money. So we're talking at least about $80,000 of no interest. So that's the minimum amount.
The suit will be filed Monday against various state agencies and officials.
It's 27 minutes before 5 o'clock. Now the WWTC Metro forecast. For Minneapolis, St. Paul, a chance of flurries tonight with an overnight low near 18. A possibility of light snow tomorrow and a high near 30. Chance of measurable snowfall, 5% tonight, 40% tomorrow. Winds will be light and variable tonight, becoming southeasterly at 8 to 13 miles per hour tomorrow. The outlook for Sunday, mostly cloudy and colder with a chance of snow at night. Currently in the Twin Cities, winds northeast at 6, humidity 68%. Barometric pressure rising from 29.60 inches, mostly cloudy skies, and 23 degrees.
Well, despite the fact that it's Friday, our last report on the traffic conditions was pretty good. Let's see if they've staying that way or they deteriorated. We check now with our Spot Patrol pilot, Howie Vetterick.
Rush hour traffic on the Interstate 35W southbound out of the downtown Minneapolis area is getting pretty heavy, but seems to be moving well. All other freeway segments in the Minneapolis area are in good shape now at 4:30. We'll go over to the St. Paul site and check that out. Spot Patrol 5.
In a State of the County address today, Hennepin County Board Chairman Richard O. Hansen was asked about all the different audits and investigations the county has gone through in the last year. Hansen says they have become too expensive and too time-consuming.
Well, I believe that all of these audits and all of these auditors have certainly consumed a good deal of time of many of our top staff. And I think to that extent it has probably it's been expensive, and it's taken them from matters that personally I believe could have been spent on more important matters that confront us.
Hennepin County Commissioner Richard O. Hansen.
Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing reports total 1975 sales up 6.5%, but net earnings at $261.6 million were down 13.3%. This despite a strong fourth quarter increase in net earnings. 3M President for U.S. Operations Lewis Lair says 40% of 3M sales are in foreign markets, and those markets are still lagging.
One out of every four 3M jobs in Minnesota depends on our sales in other countries. And since the economic recovery overseas is moving a bit slower, we're cautiously optimistic in the outlook for that part of our business. Much of our growth comes from new products, and our progress in that area continues to be good.
Lair says new 3M products introduced in 75 are just now starting to move after a slow start.
Funeral services were held this afternoon for the Minnesota high school hockey player who died during a game at Litchfield Tuesday. The services at the Hutchinson High School were for 16-year-old Keith Potter, a goalie for the Hutchinson squad who collapsed during a game between his high school and St. Cloud Cathedral.
Coming up now on 24 minutes before 5 on All News Radio, we have 23 degrees and mostly cloudy skies. I'm Doug Channing along with Bob Bungard for WWTC, your news and information service, all news all the time.
Every day, Park Furniture offers reupholstery prices that are about half the cost of new furniture. And now, during Park's annual January clearance sale, you will save an additional 25% off on both fabric and labor. A sofa or two chairs reupholstered like new in budget saver fabrics, only $112. Park Furniture can also save you an additional 25% on hundreds of other in-stock fabrics. Call Park for a no-obligation home appointment. Park Furniture, 822-3157.
This is Rosemary Frasino.
And I'm Dave Henderson with your news and information service.
The top story in the news at this moment, attorneys for former President Richard Nixon say that Mr. Nixon will answer written questions from the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. More now on this Liveline report from correspondent Wilson Hall in Washington.
Committee Chairman Frank Church says Mr. Nixon's agreement to answer in writing written interrogatories is acceptable, since the panel has assurances the former president will answer questions expeditiously. The committee staff will assemble questions and, after committee approval, send them off to San Clemente. The committee particularly wants Mr. Nixon's story of why he ordered the CIA to prevent Marxist President Allende from taking power in Chile. Church says a decision to make Mr. Nixon's answers public will be made after the committee decides if the former president has been responsive. Wilson Hall, NBC News, Washington.
A bipartisan group of 81 congressmen has urged Transportation Secretary William Coleman to reject landing rights for the Concorde supersonic jetliner at Dulles and Kennedy airports. The congressmen expressed their views in a petition sent to Coleman today. It was circulated by Joseph Fisher, a Democratic lawmaker whose Virginia district takes in Dulles Airport. In an accompanying letter, Fisher cited the plane's noise levels, its fuel consumption, and its effect on the atmosphere. Secretary Coleman will announce a decision early next month on whether the Anglo-French plane will be allowed to land in the United States.
For all practical purposes, the 28-year-old U.S. military draft is over. Today, Selective Service Director Byron Pepitone ended all draft registration and canceled the 1976 lottery drawing that would have assigned men their induction priority. Meanwhile, the Naval Reserve has sharply criticized President Ford's budget proposal, reducing the Naval Reserve from 100,000 to 50,000 men. David Rush reports.
Captain Robin Goodenough, who heads the association, said if the administration had given sufficient consideration to an internal study by the Navy, the picture would be quite different. Goodenough told reporters the study, which has not been released publicly, sets the minimum needs of a Naval Reserve force of 200,000 non-drilling pool personnel and 100,000 active reservists. He believes the document is still in the hands of the Secretary of Defense. Without referring to the document, he said, fiscal experts took a meat-ax approach and sliced the Naval Reserve force in half.
This is your news and information station.
21 minutes before 5 o'clock, 23 degrees in the Twin Cities under mostly cloudy skies. I'm Bob Bungard along with Doug Channing for your news and information service. WWTC, all news all the time.
The Squires have themselves a new coach. I'm Doug Channing and here's what's happening in sports at this hour. Zelmo Beatty has been named to coach the Virginia Squires of the American Basketball Association. Beatty, a 35-year-old graduate of Prairie View College who starred in both the ABA and the National Basketball Association. Beatty has been out of basketball this season, and he replaces you-know-who, Bill Musselman, whose resignation was announced last week. Musselman had succeeded Al Bianchi, fired after the Squires' first seven games of the season. Beatty inherits a team with a 6-35 record, the worst in pro basketball. Beatty's contract, details of which were not disclosed, runs only until the end of this season. Their security, he says he'll consider the future at the end of the campaign. The Minnesota Vikings have hired a new defensive line coach. He is J.D. Buddy Ryan, who formerly coached the defensive line of the New York Jets. Ryan replaces Jack Patera, who left the Vikes to become head coach of the new National Football League expansion team at Seattle. Well, the Minnesota Gopher basketball team hosts number one Indiana tomorrow afternoon at Williams Arena. And Gopher coach Jim Dutcher has said earlier his team is capable of an upset. And that possibility has been strengthened by this news we get now from Jack O'Rourke.
Quinn Buckner, a guard on the Indiana basketball team, may be sitting on the bench when the top-ranked Hoosiers play Minnesota tomorrow. The 6'3" senior, who has an outstanding record as a floor leader and a playmaker, is now undergoing a series of tests to determine if he's ill. Buckner played only briefly in the Indiana win over Purdue last Monday, and he says he hasn't been feeling well at all. Indiana, 6-0 in the Big Ten play. They've won 15 while losing none the overall season.
And the Gopher hockey team hopes to move into first place in the Western Collegiate Hockey Association tomorrow as they play third place Michigan. Well, tonight and tomorrow, they're only 1 point out of first place in the nation's toughest college hockey league. Minnesota Fighting Saints are host to San Diego at the St. Paul Civic Center tonight. There's another financial pinch plaguing the World Hockey Team. It's learned the Saints are behind in their rent, nearly $50,000 at the Civic Center. Earlier, the owners had trouble making their team's payroll, and the players were late in getting a two-week allocation. Saints also reported to be overdue on a $50,000 assessment to the World Hockey Association itself. According to the association constitution, the Saints could be dropped from the league if they don't pay by the middle of February. Meantime, the Minnesota North Star Hockey Club is at Vancouver for a game tonight with the Canadian team aiming to reverse their luck of Wednesday night. The North Stars dumped them 5-1 at the Met in Bloomington. Canucks in third place in the Conn Smythe division, holding an 8-point margin over the North Stars. Here's tonight's National Hockey League schedule of the other teams. The New York Rangers are at Washington, Buffalo's at Atlanta, Kansas City is at California. Other games in the World Hockey Association find Cincinnati at Indianapolis, New England's at Cleveland, Calgary's at Houston, and Edmonton plays at Winnipeg. NBA action will find Detroit at Boston, Atlanta at Buffalo, Philadelphia's at New York, Kansas City at Milwaukee, Houston at Phoenix, Los Angeles at Portland. In the ABA, it'll be Kentucky at New York, Indiana at St. Louis, and San Antonio will be playing at Denver. In major college basketball tonight, Columbia's at Cornell, Arizona State at New Mexico, Arizona at Texas El Paso, Gonzaga at Idaho, Pepperdine at Seattle, Tulane at the Air Force, and Washington plays at Hawaii. Former American League President Joe Cronin testified today in Everett, Washington at the $32 million damage suit filed by the state of Washington against the American League. And among other things, Cronin denied telling the owners of the 1969 club, the Seattle Pilots, that they had a commitment to remain in Seattle. They moved to Milwaukee after only 1 year, that in 1970. Cronin testified he told majority owner William Daly at the time that he would not get enough votes to move the team from Seattle to Milwaukee. The move and eventual sale of the franchise are the basis for that damage suit. At sports, I'm Doug Channing. It's coming up on 17 before 5.
Now the WWTC Metro forecast from Minneapolis, St. Paul, with News Radio meteorologist Fred Wagner.
The forecast for the Twin Cities, a chance of flurries tonight, the low near 18, a chance of light snow tomorrow, the high near 30. The possibility of any significant snowfall, 5% tonight and 40% tomorrow. The wind will be light and variable tonight, becoming southeast, 8 to 13 miles per hour tomorrow. And the outlook for Sunday, mostly cloudy and colder, with a chance of snow at night. This is News Radio 1280, meteorologist Fred Wagner.
Currently in the Twin Cities, winds northeast at 6 miles per hour, humidity 68%, barometric pressure rising from 29.60 inches. Mostly cloudy skies and 23 degrees. Prices on the New York stock market took a sharp turn upward today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up nearly 10.5 points. With the report, here's Thrift Trading's Joe Kramer.
Another big day in the market, up 10.47, closing at 953.95 on volume of 33,630,000 shares. 1,160 issued advanced and 396 declined. 309 new highs and 3 new lows. Transportation averages were up 181 and utilities were up 0.64. The trading index closed very bullish at 0.49. This has been Joe Kramer for WWTC News Radio and Thrift Trading Incorporated, this area's first reduced commission brokerage firm. If we can assist you, please call us collect at 335-4206 in Minneapolis.
15 minutes before 5 o'clock in the Twin Cities, 23 degrees. I'm Bob Bungard, along with Doug Channing, for your news and information service. WWTC, all news, all the time.
This is Dave Henderson.
And I'm Rosemary Ficino with your news and information service.
Former North Carolina Governor Terry Sanford has bowed out of the race for the Democratic presidential nomination. Sanford told a news conference in Durham, North Carolina, that he decided to quit because he's having trouble raising money and getting public support for his ideas. Sanford's exit still leaves 10 contenders for the nomination, and 5 of them are now looking to Mississippi, where tomorrow Democratic precinct caucuses get underway. More on that from correspondent Sue O'Brien.
Even though Mississippi is a caucus state where party decisions are made in neighborhood meetings, Senator Lloyd Benson is running like he was in a full-fledged primary. The Texan's campaign includes a heavy dependence on television advertising.
People aren't looking for bigger government, but they're looking for better government.
Benson of Texas, for Mississippi, for President of the United States.
But George Wallace is spending on advertising, too, and Wallace swept Mississippi in the 1968 general election. Claiming a late start and an inexperienced local staff, Benson says he'll be lucky to come in the middle of the five-man pack. Sue O'Brien, NBC News, Jackson, Mississippi.
In California, where a Democratic primary will be held in early June, the race is already beginning to take shape. Dan Blackburn reports.
The Democratic Party's Western Regional Chairman says three presidential hopefuls, one of them something of a surprise, have become the favorites in this part of the nation. Meeting with Los Angeles reporters, Western Chairman Charles Manatt said that Senator Henry Jackson, former Georgia Governor Jimmy Carter, and former Senator Fred Harris are currently at the top of the list. He lists two others, Senator Birch Bayh and Congressman Morris Udall, as potential gainers, especially in California. Manatt said he thinks this week's Iowa caucus results are being overrated, and he discounted talk of California's Governor Edmund Brown Jr. entering the race. Dan Blackburn, NBC News, Los Angeles.
A joint Lebanese, Syrian, and Palestinian committee overseeing the latest truce in Lebanon reports only minor disturbances in the capital of Beirut and across the countryside. Today, for the first time in a week, Beirut International Airport was open to air traffic. That ceasefire went into effect yesterday.
By a reported 9-4 vote, the House Intelligence Committee has decided to release on January 31st the final report on its probe into U.S. intelligence activities. The vote followed the deletion of some passages from that report. Those were said by intelligence agency officials to be either dangerous to agents or possibly embarrassing to the U.S. Committee member Robert McClory of Illinois, though, says he may ask the full House to block release of the report because he thinks it still reveals too many secrets.
CBS's Walter Cronkite and NBC's John Chancellor have both denied that they ever worked for the CIA or the FBI, as alleged in a report today. According to Sam Jaffe, who has admitted that he worked for both agencies while employed by CBS and ABC, both Cronkite and Chancellor were listed on a CIA roster of up to 200 reporters who had done secret intelligence work.
Investigators are searching for clues to the cause of an explosion in a Zilwaukee, Michigan grain elevator complex yesterday in which four people died and 12 others were injured. We asked Saginaw County Sheriff James Kelly if some welding being done in the grain elevator could have ignited highly combustible grain dust.
There's no question that it would be grain dust that would have caused the explosion. That would be the only material that there would be up there that would explode. But whether or not it was welding or not, it hasn't been determined at this time.
Sheriff Kelly is heading the investigation into the cause of the explosion.
81 congressmen from both parties have petitioned Transportation Secretary William Coleman to deny landing rights in the U.S. to the Anglo-French Concorde, SST. The congressmen say they oppose the supersonic jet because of the noise that it produces and because of its effect on the atmosphere as well as its fuel consumption. Coleman will decide that issue by early next month. The time right now, exactly 11 minutes before the hour.
On Wall Street today, another heavy trading session. Some 33,640,000 shares changed hands, and the Dow Jones average moved sharply upward, finishing the session at 953.95, up 10.47. One computer company says its own fortunes this year are as uncertain as the fortunes of the nation's overall economy. Tom Myrie reports from Minneapolis.
Stuart Baird, manager of Honeywell Corporate Public Relations, says the computer industry is anticipating a modest recovery this year. However, he says computer sales improvements are dependent on a general economic recovery.
Honeywell expects most of its increase in business to come from its existing customers. And we have noticed a period of stretch outs of people who have ordered a computer system but are asking it, you know, the delivery be stretched out a little later. They are living with the equipment that they have.
Baird adds that Honeywell computer sales are tied to the industrial sector of the economy, where recovery is expected to be slower than on the consumer side. I'm Tom Myrie in Minneapolis.
Again on Wall Street, today's closing Dow Jones average up 10.47. This is your news and information station.
WWTC News Radio presents Business Perspectives with Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce Executive Vice President Charles Crusell.
Project for Pride in Living is a Minneapolis organization that works in neighborhoods to rehabilitate homes. When this organization came to International Mala Foods for assistance this year, Mala Foods responded with $3,000 worth of pictures and mirrors from its decorative accessories division. Multifoods primarily is in the business to sell products rather than to give them away. But like most responsible Minnesota-based companies, Multifoods has an active contributions policy aimed at improving the education, health, and welfare of the communities in which it does business. In the past year, Project for Pride and Living was just one of some 600 organizations supported by contributions from Minneapolis-based International Multifoods. This is Charles Crusell for News Radio 1280, reminding you that business progress means community progress.
I've got it. I got it at Zaire. Compare. You can't do better than Zaire.
What's with the colonial hat, Mildred? You the spirit of 76?
Uh-uh, the clearance of 76.
What's that?
It's Zaire Shopper City's way of starting the bicentennial year off with a good old American tradition, the pre-inventory clearance sale.
I suppose Zaire Shopper City is offering everything at revolutionary low prices.
You guessed it. There are specials on fashions, home furnishings, hardware, health and beauty aids, shoes. Great savings in every department in the store.
Just when is this clearance of 76 at Zaire Shopper City?
It's going on right now. Just bring your charge card.
The Zaire Shopper City clearance of 76. You know, Mildred, I think I'll make it my patriotic duty to be there.
And that's the spirit, Harriet.
Compare. You can't do better than Zaire.
On News Radio 1280, it's 7.5 minutes now until 5 o'clock. Mild conditions prevailed across the region today with readings in the 30s and 40s west of the warm front in our area and 20s elsewhere. A low expected to deepen and move southeast during the night, expected to dump sizable amounts of snow in northern sections of Minnesota and Wisconsin, lesser amounts elsewhere. Gusty surface winds following a Pacific occlusion into North Dakota tonight will cause blowing and drifting snow and poor traveling conditions in that area, again North Dakota. Some snow likely to continue in the northern border areas of the five-state region tomorrow, and the Arctic front expected to drop rapidly southeastward after that, bringing lower temperatures to the area. Right now, partly cloudy and 23 degrees in the Twin Cities.
It's very easy to fall into bad shopping habits, especially in this day of easy credit. Joan Shepherd suggests that you try to curb your buying appetite.
Many consumers are going over their finances right now in the preparation of their income tax. Perhaps you're one of the consumers who's adding up the interest charges on revolving charge accounts and at the same time wondering how you spend all of that money. There are basically two categories of buying, planned buying and impulse buying. It's the excessive impulse buying that ruins many a household budget and gets some consumers into difficulty. Of course, a certain amount of impulse buying is normal and fun. We all do it on vacation, but a lot of impulse buying is done in local shopping centers by consumers with plastic credit cards in their pockets or purses. Ask yourself, why am I in this store? What am I looking for? Is it something I really need? And last but most important, why am I buying this merchandise? Unless you are fully aware of your buying habits and behavior, you will spend a lot of money you really didn't intend to, and possibly have to go without other items in your budget. This is Joan Shepherd.
One feminist and historian thinks the women's liberation movement will mean liberation for men as well. Correspondent Barbara Hochter reports.
Many feminists have been saying for years now that women's liberation, or improving the status of women in our society, will in the end be a benefit to men too. One such woman is Carolyn Byrd, author of Born Female and Enterprising Women, who thinks there are many men who are probably turned off completely by the work ethic. Now that the role of women in business and industry is expanding, Byrd says she expects and hopes a new freedom for men will result.
What I would hope and find happening among some young people is that many of the young men, they don't have to support wives because wives can support themselves. And so they tend to be choosier about the kind of work they do.
Carolyn Byrd says she'd love to see unaspiring young men stay at home if they want to. She adds that the notion that a woman must marry a man who is more ambitious and dynamic than she is much too hard on both men and women. This is Barbara Hochter.
Former First Lady Mamie Eisenhower is having difficulty fighting off a virus infection. She remains hospitalized at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington after more than 3 weeks. A hospital spokesman said today Mrs. Eisenhower's condition is improving.
A bitter winter freeze has brought the lowest temperatures in as much as a decade to the Northeast today. The mercury dropped to more than 30 below zero in parts of New England. In New York City, last night's low was one below, the coldest for this state in some 8 years. This is your news and information station.
Partly cloudy and 23 degrees in the Twin Cities at 4 until 5. I'm Doug Channing along with Bob Bungard for WWTC, the news center on your radio dial, where sports presented every 30 minutes right here on News Radio 1280.
Right now, there are people starving to death in East Africa. They will die unless we help them. There are people fighting disease and floods in Asia. They won't survive without us. There are people here in our own country who want to live in homes without rats, who want jobs, who want a future. They need our help. The God we worship has been generous with most of us. In fact, God has been generous with most of our country during its first 200 years. But we're expected by God to share what we have with others not so blessed. Join with members of your local church or synagogue and make plans to relieve suffering. Start working together, making sacrifices, aiding one another. When you start giving help to others, you end up helping yourself as well. Welcome God to America's bicentennial. Practice what you pray. A public service message on behalf of Religion and American Life, the Ad Council, and this station.
The 1935 movie The Informer won an Oscar for star Victor McLaughlin's bitter portrayal of the precarious position of the man who tells on his compatriots. Kevin Myers reports that harsh measures are still used in dealing with those who inform in modern-day Northern Ireland.
They're claiming by the provisional IRA that 8 men were responsible for the killing of a young Roman Catholic near the town of Dungannon highlights the growing ruthlessness the provisionals are showing towards alleged informers. The provisionals claimed they killed the man because he'd been giving information to the British security forces. Only last weekend, another man was shot dead by the provisionals in Belfast after a week-long interrogation for the same alleged offense. Irish history is almost an endless story of the revolutionary and the informer, each determined to destroy the other. The provisionals have always felt a greater mercilessness towards the enemy they hate more than the British Army, the Irishman who helps the British Army. And if the provisionals are launching a purge of informers, it can only be that they foresee large-scale hostilities in the near future. This is Kevin Myers, NBC News, Belfast.
These are among the stories we're following at 2 minutes before the hour. Secretary of State Kissinger reports progress, but no breakthrough in his talks with Soviet officials on a new nuclear arms treaty.
Secretary Kissinger calls his meetings with the Russians on Angola unsatisfactory. Reuters News Service has reported the beginning of a withdrawal of South African troops from the Angolan war front.
The House Intelligence Committee approves its final report, summing up its months of investigation into illegal activities by American intelligence agencies.
Former North Carolina Governor Terry Sanford has withdrawn from the run for the Democratic presidential race. All news all day, every day. This is your news and information service with Dave Henderson. I'm Rosemary Priscino.